I've often thought it'd be a good idea if sometime or other I could get down to putting on record the manner of our exit as a family from Uganda in 1928. I can't remember exactly when we set forth, but I think it must have been early March, because I know that we arrived in England about the middle of April. In those days it was a very long journey, and a bit tricky with two babies who seemed to wet more than anybody else could possibly wet, and the prospect of 2.5 days and nights crossing the lake, and then 2.5 days down from railhead to the coast, and only at that time one train per week, and there was one ferry from Jinja to catch the weekly steamer. Well, you can imagine the preparations for leaving Uganda were rather difficult, particularly one had to remember that on the way down to the coast, at one point at the top of the Great Rift Valley, one was 8,000 feet up, and therefore very, very, very cold, so that I had to be prepared with woolies and sort of makeshift eiderdowns. I made them actually of cotton wool for the babies, so that they didn't die of cold, and they could easily be removed and thrown out of the window when we descended to tropical heat. Well, eventually we did, I cannot imagine how, get off. I was telling Jessica that the other night that the wonderful Aya Seferosa spent the last night ironing the nappies, because it was pouring with wet, and we had couldn't possibly wait for the sun to come out next day. And so she spent the night ironing the nappies dry, so that everything should start dry and clean. In those days, of course, there were no disposables. There were no plastic bags. I had a Wilson canvas bag with sort of holes around the top and a drawstring for the nappies, one for wet and one for dry. And I think that the number of our packages in all was 52. Well, see, some things had to go in the hold and some to go in the baggage room for use on the ship, because one had access to the baggage room once a week. But in the hold, no, those were things, well, like the elephant's foot and that sort of thing, that one wouldn't want till one arrived at home. Well, in those days, the transport was very difficult, because naturally with 52 packages, no friend, however kindly, could possibly take us. And there were only two available buses in Kampala, both run by an Indian firm. Well, we hired one of these buses, and we were going to share. There was another woman going home, a Mrs. Hargreaves, with her son Gerald, who was just about the same age as Jim, I think, no, wee bit older. Well, we combined to hire this bus, and mercifully, our bus started off ahead of the one which was cram-jammed with Indians. And these were literally the only two forms of transport available. Well, a short while after Kampala, our engine showed very serious signs of trouble. Well, Papa got out, of course, and tinkered around and discovered that the radiator was practically empty. Well, it was starting to boil anyway. And in those parts, you don't have bubbly trickling streams. When you come to a stream, it is literally a swamp of papyrus, and you have to sink something in and hope you don't get fully mud. So we filled up with the muddied water from time to time, I think three times before finally the engine thought it had done its bit and conked out completely. This was about halfway to Jinja. I can't quite remember how far it is actually from Kampala to Jinja. We had for the last bit, we had borrowed the Bozeman's house, so we'd left Nagunga before Jessica was born. She was then 4 months old. Well, there was a fearful predicament, of course, because it was quite obvious that nothing could be done with our bus at all. So we had to evacuate. And I think the boys pushed her to the side of the road, and all the luggage was deposited by the side of the road and the family. And we awaited the oncoming of the Indian bus that was behind us. Well, we flagged them down, of course, but they were absolutely crammed to the roof. And they did consent, by dint of great squashing, to take me and three children, Jessica on one arm, and Diana, I hung on to the other arm, and Jim, Mrs. Hargreaves sort of more or less clung on to him, and we were squashed in between stinking Indians. But they couldn't take a stick of luggage, so Father was left behind with all the luggage, and I had hanging on to my wrist a sort of a bottle bag which had one bottle, Jessica's next feed, and one nappy wrapped round it. And I sort of couldn't look ahead at all. Anyway, when we got to the river, it isn't the river there, it is just, Ginger, is just before Lake Victoria spills over what was then the Ripon Falls and becomes the White Nile. It's very wide there, well over half a mile, I say, more like three quarters. When we arrived, we were late and the ferry had gone. So how to get across? Well, there were some canoes with natives, and we hired two canoes. And I shall never forget that journey, because crossing water at midday, it was midday by now, under the tropical sun, was an experience I wouldn't wish to repeat. I had a tiny little topi over Jessica, which I held onto. Diana had her little topi, and Jim had his, and Gerald Hargreaves. Well, there was no seating accommodation as such in the canoes. You simply sat on a very slippery round pole and hoped for the best, with your feet washing about in water. And there was always a boy bailing all the time with half a gourd, so that you wouldn't be swamped. Anyway, we arrived at the other side and decanted ourselves. And as fast as possible, we got to the steamer, which had been waiting for us, of course, expecting us on the ferry. And I went to the captain and told us. Well, of course, as he explained to me very kindly and tenderly, he said, I can't wait very long, or I shall miss the train, and all the other passengers will miss their ship. So it all seemed so safe, though I was so glad to get the three of you home. It seemed so safe. No fears of malaria, snakes, all the different things that could. I suppose I changed so nappy, but I'm sure Diana was soaking by that time. She always was. Anyway, the captain very kindly gave me his telescope, and I hung over the rail watching the other shore, which I could just see. And he kept on coming up to me and asking if I could see anything at all. And I said, no, there's nothing at all. And then he said, you know, I don't know what to do, because it's just your family against all the other passengers, and I cannot wait. Well, I couldn't imagine what to do. I just hoped and prayed. And then suddenly I saw two specks on the other side moving. And in the front of one of the specks was a green object, which I recognized as being the big green Wilson canvas bag containing the cot and all sorts of spare utensils and potties and this, that, and the other, you know. And so I told the captain, and we almost embraced on the spot. Anyway, just in time, all this enormous load was loaded onto the ship, and off we started. And that was a wonderful moment, of course, the reunion, because I couldn't imagine what was going to happen. I couldn't, actually, I hadn't got a ticket or anything, had not a penny on me, and nor any food, or no food for Jessica, nothing at all. Anyway, we were saved. And then the next hazard was the trip across the lake, because owing to the extraordinary vagaries of Lake Victoria, it's very dangerous indeed to go across at night, so it was tie up at night, which makes the journey very long. Though it isn't a very great distance along that across that corner, really. But having travelled on this little steamer, the Clement Hill, before, I knew what the facilities or not were. So I had armed myself with cards and cards of large safety pins. And by this time, the wet nappy bed bag was absolutely full to bursting. And I waited till everybody was, as I hoped, in their blameless beds. And then I issued forth, and in the very small washroom, I washed what appeared to be 10 million nappies. And in dead of night, lovely, hot, calm night, I dressed the ship overall, all round its rails, with nappies pinned on. And I rose, crack of dawn, everybody else was still in bed, and I collected them. That was fine. Second night I did the same, and it worked extremely well, and I was terribly proud of this achievement, because my babies were starting with everything clean and dry, and nobody knew a thing. Well, we disembarked at Kisumu, which was then railhead. No, it had just stopped being railhead, because the railway was then open to Jinja, but we hadn't taken it because of the inconvenience of the tiny little carriages on the new railway. And we were walking along the quay when there was a shout behind us, and I saw a white flag being flown. "Hi, Mrs. Semity, you left one of your white flags behind." This was the officer of the watch. I had watched me both nights with great, and had hooked one. So I was shamed. He had his joke. I didn't mind, really. I couldn't care less.